Well, good morning and welcome. It is good to be together. It's good to be back with you. I want to thank Aaron for these last 2 weeks of filling in and sharing with us. Much appreciated. And we had a good little vacation there for a couple weeks, so I was thankful for that. It was very restful and renewing. And so it was good to go. It's good to be back. Let me go ahead and dismiss our youngest ones. And so, as I say, if you can fit one of those tiny chairs, you're dismissed, released, free to go. You're also welcome to stay. Thank you, Ava Joy. For the rest of us, we are going to head back to Leviticus today, Sefer Vayikra. Page 74 in your pew Bible, if you want to grab that. Their words will also be on this lovely screen behind me. And so hopefully we've got you covered all around. We continue working our way through what is the Torah? The Torah being the first five books of our Bibles and what we have been calling for quite some time now, the Jesus backstory. Again, in the same way that each one of us has a backstory. Right, each one of us has a history of experience. Each one of us has joys and sorrows and hardships. We have all of the kind of daily activities, and we have the once in a lifetime moments. And in the same way, Jesus, he too has a backstory. It's found in what we call the Old Testament, or more specifically, in what is the Torah, with all of its joys and sorrows, and all of its hardships, all of its daily activity and once-in-a-lifetime moments, right? All of it offering us the backstory to the life of Jesus. In fact, in Matthew, it tells us Jesus is the fulfillment of the whole of the Torah. And with that, today we now come to what is the 25th, if you can believe it, the 25th Parsha. Noting the Torah, the first five books, are divided into 54 Parshiot. We're taking them one by one, and today we come to the 25th Parsha, Parsha Sav. Travels from Leviticus chapter 6 and verse 8, all the way through 8 and 36. It picks up at 6 and 8, it reads this, Vayedaber Adonai el Moshe l'amor, translated, said the Lord, said Yahweh, to Moses, saying, and what was he saying? Sav et haharon, Ve'elbanav l'mor. Give Aaron and his sons this command. And what command is Moses to give? We read the next line here in our translation. It says, these are the regulations. These are the regulations. And then from there, we're off and running. And really the rest of the Parsha, all the way, most actually all of Leviticus, but here in this Parsha, all the way to the end, it is all about what is in Hebrew called korban. You can say korban, you can say korban. Korbanot would be the plural. And it's all about the different kinds of what are the offerings or the sacrifices. And we can think of the burnt offering or the grain offering, the sin offering, the guilt offering, the fellowship offering. And with that, there are all kinds of intricate sort of detail. By way of example, here in 6 and 20, this is about the grain offering. We read a tenth of an ephah of the finest flour, half of it in the morning, half in the evening, must be prepared with oil on a griddle, well mixed, and then it's to be presented broken in pieces. And all through this parsha, it goes on and on, over and over again, this sort of detailed, intricate, tedious, dare I say boring? I mean, really, nobody reads Leviticus for the joy of reading, right? And yet, I think if we stick with it, underneath all of that, we find something maybe even interesting, profound. We certainly find, I believe, something meaningful for us here this morning. Noting, as we mentioned, all the way back at the very beginning of Leviticus, which was actually June 11th now. We've been a few weeks away from this series. But it was all the way back on June 11th. We mentioned even then, but even here today in this Parsha, right? Again, it's all about the the korban. It's all about the korbanot. Right? It's all about these sacrifices. It's all about these offerings. And with that, again, it translates as offerings or sacrifices. And it's there that the Rabbi Michael Kegel, he puts it this way. He says, simply by using the word, I think the translation sacrifice, simply by using the word sacrifice, the English language stresses what is lost and given up in the korbanot. But, he goes on, this is really just a side effect of the korban. The essence of the korban, expressed in Hebrew, is drawing near to God. And we can think back to last time, again, back to June 11th. And if you remember, if you were here, we talked about the small aleph and the little repetition. And if you remember, it was all about affection and it was about intimacy. And we said even then, it was about coming close and it was about drawing near. Meaning, as we read here all about the korbanot, as we read all about the sacrifices, the offerings, as we read about the burnt and the grain and the guilt and the sin and the fellowship offerings, and as we read about all of the sort of intricate kind of detail that's woven into all of that, keep in mind that all of it is for one purpose. And that is that we are drawn into a deeper relationship with God. All of it is pointed at moving toward a deeper relationship with God, and consequently then a deeper relationship with one another here in this room. And that is absolutely true for all of the sacrifices, for all of the offerings, for all of the korbanot. And yet perhaps there is one that we find in here that's even more so. It's one of what are called the shelamim, one of what are the fellowship offerings. Sometimes we see that translated peace offerings. And it's here in Leviticus 7:11, and Vezot Torat, these are the regulations for, the root of this is the word Torah. And Torah, when we think of Torah, we often think of the first five books, but we think about the law of Moses, and it can be translated law. Here it's translated regulations. But literally, it's translated as instruction. It's instructions, it's guidance, it's direction. And so we read here, Vezot Torat, or Torah, Torah. And then it says, Zavach HaShalamim, and think here, offerings of the peace. And so we could say these are the regulations, or we could say this is the Torah, right? These are the instructions for the offering of our peace. Noting that with each offering, and these were animal offerings, and it could be a lamb or a goat, and so with each offering, there were all kinds of instruction around what parts could be eaten, who could eat them, and when. And so with that, if we dig down just one more layer, we find one korban, one shelamim, that kind of stands out. It's called the Todah. It's translated here as an expression of thankfulness. And this Todah offering, it's unique in a couple of different ways. From Rabbi Mordechai Schiffman, he writes, unlike the other peace offerings, the Todah, the Thanksgiving offering, was only allowed to be eaten the day it was brought and the following night. There were other offerings that were allowed to be kind of leftovers. I don't know how many of you like leftovers. They could be left over to the next day. But the Todah here was only allowed to be eaten the day it was brought and the following night. The leftovers were not allowed to be eaten the subsequent day. Also, unlike the other peace offerings, the Thanksgiving offering was also different in that it was required to be accompanied by 40 loaves of bread. And so then he kind of poses the question, why the differences? Noting it's in the differences that really highlight here the deeper meaning for us, as the late Rabbi Obadiah Sforno, as he writes, he says, the increased amount of food and decreased amount of time to eat incentivized the inviting of guests. Unlike other sacrifices, which may be more private in nature, the ideal Thanksgiving offering is a public endeavor. The social setting allowed the benefactor of God's graces to recall the details of God's wondrous deeds to a larger audience, hence making God's name great among the attendees. And so really, unlike the other korban, the Todah offering is structured for the purpose of gathering a community here on a Sunday morning, maybe, gathering a community together to give thanks, right? To offer our expressions of thankfulness. Not only then, but here and now, even today. In fact, Rabbi Kegel, he says, Todah, the Thanksgiving offering, is the one type of personal offering that never becomes obsolete. It's in the Vayikra Rabbah, one of the Midrash texts. And referring to the end times here, it says all offerings will be abolished except the Todah. And so with the coming of Messiah and the end times, it's stated that all offerings will be abolished. Burnt offering, right? Grain offering, the sin, the guilt offering. With Messiah, those are abolished, but it says except for the Todah. Noting it is that attitude of gratitude. It is that expression of thankfulness that we see then flowing down and in and all through the life of Jesus and his disciples and down to you and me. Jesus himself, by way of example, Matthew 15:35, he told the crowd to sit down. He took the 7 loaves and the fish, and when he had, it says, given thanks. When he had made his Todah, when he had offered up his expression of thankfulness, it says he broke them, gave to the disciples, who gave to the people. Right? It's this idea of being given that we might then give. John 11:41, so they took away the stone, and this here is the passage about the death of Lazarus. So they took away the stone, then Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you. Right? His expression of thankfulness, his Todah, that you have heard me. Mark 14:22, while they were eating, Jesus took bread, and when he had given thanks, broke it, gave it to his disciples, saying, take, this is my body. Then he took a cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them. It says they all drank it. To his followers in Thessalonica, 1 Thessalonians 5:18, rejoice always, pray continually, in everything. It says, give thanks. Colossians 3, whatever you do, word and deed, do all in the name of Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father. And so, it's really into that sort of a spirit this morning that I'm going to let you all, us together, finish this message. I want to invite us this morning to Todah, to share our expressions of thankfulness to God, to do that in the community together. Again, from Rabbi Schiffman, he notes, without the actual sacrifice in contemporary times, the destruction of the temple, these offerings, these sacrifices are no longer made. Without the actual sacrifice in contemporary times, it is important to create other opportunities to demonstrate gratitude in public. By making gratitude a social good, we can create an elevating spiral of positive energy that can help propel us forward to continued virtue and service of God and others. And so again, I want to invite us then to use Schiffman's word, I want to invite us to enter into we could say, a created opportunity. Right, to share our thankfulness for the public expression of our gratitude, to say, as he says here, to create that elevating spiral of positive energy. I want to invite us here this morning. And so for us both to consider and to share, for us to consider, for what do you give God thanks today? To take a few moments and to think, for what do I give God thanks? And then with that, I'm going to sit down and Shane's going to come up and grab the microphone, and he's offered to come around to you, so you can just raise your hand or stand up where you are. You can still come down in front if you would like. We often do that during open worship. But Shane will bring the microphone around, so just raise your hand, stand up where you are. But what story of gratitude will you share with this community? For what do you give God thanks, and what story of gratitude will you share here today with this community? What confession of Todah will you offer as a public expression? As Rabbi Kegel reminds us, it is always good to thank the Lord. And thanking the Lord never gets old, for the simple reason that the infinite light of God is unfathomable. No matter how many times we have plunged into its depths, fathom after fathom. Thanking God, we enter into the infinite wonder that is above, below, behind, and within the wondrous world. And so, Shane, if you want to come up and grab the mic, and we'll open up some space for sharing, expressing our thankfulness, and then Roger, you can, when you sense the time, you can come up and close us. For what do you give God thanks today? What story of gratitude will you share with this community? What confession of Todah will you offer as a public expression? Savet Aharon ve'et banav l'mor, give Aaron and his sons this command.
I think probably something that I'm cumulative, more appreciative than anything in my life is how, no matter what happens, how ugly or bad it seems at the time, that God will somehow use that for a positive thing. And I could probably list, you know, a couple dozen things right now, but just think of ugly stuff, bad stuff, whether it's flunking out of something or a motorcycle crash or fill in the blank or a low-paying job. And I look at that and it's just amazing that everything works out, you know? I can point to so many ugly things and go, well, if that hadn't happened, that wouldn't have happened. If I hadn't done that stupid thing, would I have this blessing over here? So to me, it's just stunning to ponder that. And I'm in my 60s now. I can't believe that. And the miracles are still chugging along. And I appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Wow, that's funny, because I was just sitting here thinking how gratitude is probably the last thing I want to hear about this morning. I'm just so wiped out and tired, but I know that it's really at the heart of what's going on for me right now, too. And I'll just start by saying that I'm in the middle of a family reunion, which is something I should be extremely grateful for, and I know somewhere inside of me I am, but it's so exhausting. I can't really fully appreciate it right now, but I will. But as in regards to that, my son came in from Seattle last night at very late with his dog to stay at my place. And I had no idea. I mean, of course, I, you know, invited him, and because there was no place, everybody was crashed in all the other different houses, you know, around. So I as grateful as I am for all that, I had no idea what I was letting myself in for with a dog, getting prepared for a dog in a small apartment where there's, you know, and it's a big dog. So that was kind of interesting. But what I realized I'm grateful for that I hear in my head, but I'm just too tired to really experience it, is that he kept thanking me over and over for letting him stay there. And I'm like, what? Of course you can stay here, you know? I mean, of course you're welcome. Of course this, that, and the other. And even this morning when I left the house, he said thanks again. And I just, that is, I guess that's the one thing that's blowing me away with the gratitude thing. is that, you know, one of my kids, one who I would maybe not expect it from, really appreciates me. And this is his way of saying it, you know, doing it, or showing it. And I guess I'm not used to that with any of them. But if I've learned anything from that I'm sharing this morning, it's that everybody has their own way of loving and giving and sharing and showing that they care. It's everyone has their own love language. And I guess I'm grateful that I could see that, you know, that I could see that now and see that with my children. And they're all so very different. And now that they're there together and, you know, everybody's butting up against everybody else in fun ways and not fun ways and everything. But I'm really grateful for that.
Good morning, everyone. I take the step to come forward to make it easier for all of you. For some of you who don't know me, my name is Elizabeth Buayo. I'm from Kenya. And 16 years ago, for those who have been here all that time, remember what happened. And I'm here to give gratitude to God for the miracle that He has performed for giving people like you to me, to walk with me all these 16 years. When I look back, I say it is just a miracle. I remember the time I left, many of you could not understand what I was saying because of what had happened. But we serve a mighty God, a living God, who cares for us and takes care of us. Today I'm thrilled just to see many of you who have supported me, who have walked with me, who have encouraged me. And I just wanted to be here so that all of you can see me. I don't want to stand at the back and people start looking, where is this voice coming from? Thank you to all of you. Thank you. Thank you is not enough. But I pray that the Lord will reward each one of you secretly, in a way that no human being can understand. Thank you and God bless you.
Her words made me thankful for my daughter, our daughter Serenity, and her husband Andy, and their four kids. They just finished visiting Chwele, where Grace Kudo and Paul Kudo and our congregation have spent so much time, and Elizabeth has also been a part of that. Most of us have heard about that for a long time. And over by the kitchen door, you'll see a sign that they made for us. But it's good to see you today, Elizabeth. And yes, that was a shocking, difficult, challenging time when you came to us 16 years ago to get reparative surgery from the horrific experience that you had. I'm so thankful. But I'm thankful that our children get to go out and see what all has happened because of all of the hard work of Paul and Grace Kudo and our congregation and different people in our congregation going out there and working and visiting and helping that community, sharing with that community. And so that's what I'm grateful this morning for.
Yesterday is July 15th. Was the 74th anniversary of my parents, Floyd and Arlene Watson, getting married, July 15th, 1949. And I'm grateful for the life that they lived and the work of grace in their lives by God. Their love story starts out with a lot of pomp and circumstance. They announced their engagement at the May Day celebration at what was then Pacific College, now George Fox University, where my mother was the May Day queen and my father was the cardinal, and they announced that day that they were getting married, and they were married 3 months later. My father passed away in 2019, about 45 days before their 70th wedding anniversary. As I look back on their lives, they always tried to live their life with purpose and to follow the lead of God in their lives. One of the things they were always purposeful about was being close to the church in terms of proximity to where we lived. For instance, when I was in grade school, we lived here in Tigard, and we were active here at Tigard Friends. When we met in a different building over on 72nd, across from what is now Lowe's. At that time, it was a grade school where I attended, and we lived about two blocks from the church, and we were there often, you know, twice on Sunday, on Wednesdays, at youth activities, and wherever we were at the church. And so that was just part of our culture, to be part of that. And that happened all through my growing up years, that we always lived close to the church, and so that we could have an active part in the activities of what was going on without difficulty. Things weren't perfect. My father could be explosive at times and would sometimes erupt in anger. Through the years, I saw God do a work in his life, which we have theorized as his children, that it began when my maternal grandmother, my mother's mother, came to live with us when I was about 15 years old. And she expressed to my parents that she was concerned for the impact that her living with them would have on their marriage. And my older brother has said that he believes that was a turning point in my father's life and in his difficulty with outbursts of anger, that he began to see from that this tiny little woman who spoke to him. He was a big man at 6'2" and 200 plus pounds, that this woman spoke a concern that was real, and I need to fly straight here. And the reflection of my mother then was that when my grandmother came to live with us, my father's behavior changed. And then we just continued to see growth in that way. Now, he wasn't perfect all the rest of his life, but there was growth going all along. And then his last great love, or great act of love for my mother, would be on her 94th birthday. And she was on hospice. They were both living in the health center at Friendsview. And it was her birthday, May 23rd, 2019. And her hospice nurse had brought a little chocolate cake, just enough for maybe four people to have a piece of cake. And so my father called me and said, I want you to come and have a little birthday party for your mom tonight. And he called my brother and his wife out in Yamhill, and we'd like to have you come and have a little birthday party for your mom tonight. And so we all gathered there, and we had a little birthday party, and she just thoroughly enjoyed it. And then we looked over and saw that he'd fallen asleep because he'd worked hard enough that he was just so tired that he just was exhausted and fell asleep. It was just about 3 or 4 days later that I received a call from the Friendsview nurse where they were living, and she said, your father isn't doing very well. And so we went over and spent the day with him, and he went home to be with Jesus that night, just a few days after planning that birthday party. So now I'm really grateful to see that model of a couple who were committed to each other for all those years and were willing to grow in their relationship. And at 45 years, Sue and I feel like newlyweds in comparison, and still have many years to be committed to one another, to follow their example. I'm appreciative of that example of God's love and grace in their lives.
Hello, my name is Tyler. I was in a big accident where I broke in my pelvic bone on June, the day right before Father's Day. My dad, you probably know of him. His name is Ron. He helps around the church, does the feed pantry and stuff like that. And he helped me, and I ended up in the hospital. I was doing a job, and I was rigging a big tree, and it almost could crush me, and I wouldn't have been here for the. But the grace of God, I thank Him every day, because He gave me. And a few weeks ago, you probably noticed I was in a walker, and within a couple of days after, I was actually walking. So from June 17th, a couple of days later, on Thursday, I was walking 845 steps. I was praying to Jesus. I was in a bed where I couldn't even move. The nurses had to help and put me on a structure to move me from one bed to the other. But with Jesus, He helped my soul, and He, with my girlfriend and everything, Jalissa, she helped me and give me the faith to grow. I couldn't even walk, but with Jesus, and said, my only son, Tyler, you can do this. So I, in my brain, I put my hands and I started doing little walks, because my dad's a physical therapist, so they saw that I could do it. And then a few days later, I went and I took a little bit more steps. I went and I walked all the way to Piddick Mansion and looked at the beautiful serenity of the mountain and the glorious thing. And then a few days later, the greatest thing that God gave me was I ended up, Monday, Tuesday, I ended up walking on crutches. And then a few later, Before that, Friday, I was walking. I thought I couldn't walk to my mailbox. So I walked with my girlfriend, and I took the little bit crutches, and I walked all the way there and back and make it. And I did fine, no problems. It hurt, pain, yeah, you can have pain, but Jesus takes away that pain. You got to always remember it. When you're angry, fear, burden, He always will save you. So He's always in my heart every day. No evil person can take that from me. That's what He died on the cross. Another thing was He helped me. On July 5th, I got a great news from my doctor. After I doing the crutches and all these miracles and working, and then I took the next step is I walked upstairs. I wanted to spend time with for the 4th of July and stuff. Right before that, I wanted to visit my family because we were having a little bit but it didn't go all planned because my sister lost her cat, but life moves on. Jesus loves them and everything. But I got to do what I love, being with my family. And also another blessing too was I got to see fireworks. All the beautiful things in Happy Valley and different things that Jesus died on the cross to give us, to show us the lights. He's always the light that shines darkness. So He keeps doing that. So, and then a few days later, on July 5th, the doctor said, you made it. You can get out of bed. You can go on your side. He saw that of it. So he said, Tyler, you can get back on your mower, because I do the same thing that Phil, I own a landscaping business. And he gave me, he cleared me, my doctor cleared me, and I tried it. I did a job in Estacada. I cut the whole yard myself, by myself. My girlfriend was trying to help me and everything, and I did it right then. Then, Friday, I cut 3 more yards. And then Sunday, I was back doing a little bit of tree work for my friend. I got stronger and stronger. But the message, point about it is Jesus, even, I had a vision too. I was sleeping one day with my girlfriend and I seen Jesus even giving his hands wide open and sharing all the love and the compassion and everything. And I had another vision where I was talking to my pastor too, my second home from Athey Creek, was I want to become a pastor myself. So that's what he's trying to help me out on and trying to, I'm thinking about going back to school to do that and to spread the words of Jesus. And that's what we need for our society.
So I'll talk from behind so you don't have to look. It can be mystical. As you know, 4 years ago, I was perched on a cliff, ready to jump due to my drug addiction. And it's been 4 years clean and sober now. Last night, I had my three-month-old granddaughter in my arms, screaming at the top of her lungs, and my year-and-a-half-old grandson up in the crib, screaming his lungs out. And my daughter was taking a shower. And there was that sense of panic, like they're both crying, and what do? I got to fix this. And then it brought tears to my eyes. At least I'm here, and I'm helping. And they were all resolved in 20, 30 minutes. My grandson fell asleep in my arms as I gave him a head rub. And in AA, I've always cringed at the phrase attitude of gratitude. And I don't know because it's so kitsch, but the fact of the matter is that I also have a tough relationship with the word attitude. So is attitude a state of mind? Is it created? Are you creating that attitude? So for me, I prefer in AA meetings, I prefer what this means to me here as communion. And that's a powerful word for me because it means a state of being that more than one person can engage in. And so for me, one of the songs that I've never heard you play before is one of my mother's favorite song. And this morning, I was brought to tears because I was able to take a shower and thank my mom and dad. And I've been watching Don do what he does, and it's fascinating, and it's invigorating, and it engages me, and I come back every time I want to, because I want to hear what he's got next. And for this, the Jesus backstory, I keep on, because I studied the Old Testament, and my God, it was hard to consume. It's really painful. And I come here every Sunday going, okay, how's he going to pull something out of this one? and today was, again, once more very powerful. And I thank Don for what he does. And the one thing I'm going to take away from this, you know, we all memorize in pictures, is that when he talked about the 40 loaves, I thought to myself, that's what the scones are, aren't they? And God knows I don't need to be eating scones. But there is a sort of symbolism. There's a token appreciation and part of the communion of, yeah, I'm going to at least have the scone with the berries in it because that's the healthiest one, right? So thank you, Don. Thank all of you for creating this community. I love you all.
I just have to thank the Lord that I was willing to take a step that was really scary one day. And I got to the place where I really wanted to know how God's voice sounded to me. If it was really Him speaking to me, because I would have thoughts come to me to go and do something, and it didn't make sense, and it was scary. And one day I was at the church, and I looked across the street, and there was a woman sitting on the stoop, and I needed to, and I felt this thought, go over and speak to that woman. And I thought, well, that's a funny thing. You know, I don't know her. And so I didn't do it. A couple of weeks later, I was at the church again, and I looked across the street, and he says, go into that house and speak to that woman. Well, she wasn't sitting outside this time. And so I think with everything within me, I said, I want to know how you speak to me. And I started down the street. And every block, I got this voice that said, go back to that house. I went 5 blocks, and every block it was go back to that house. And finally, I just said, God, I've always wondered if this is your voice to me. I want to know, but you've got to help me. And I turned the car around, and I went and pulled into the driveway. She wasn't sitting out there this time. So I walked up, and I knocked on the door, and I thought, oh, God, help me. I don't know what to say. And the instant that she opened up the door, God brought back to my mind the only thing, and I had completely forgotten it, and it just came out of my mouth. I understand, I'm Meredith Morrison, I understand that your little girl came to Sunday school at our church across the street, and she was in the same room with my little boy. And she said, oh, come in, come in. Well, you all probably know this was Karen Waite. And she became probably my most best friend. We had a relationship that was really different because we only got together once a year on our birthdays. And we just started off just the way that it ended the last time that we were together. She was so busy and everything, and I didn't want to, you know, disrupt that. But what happened, I realized, I said, oh, God, I think that really was your voice. And the next months, while I was praying and having my morning devotions, God would give me a, I don't think Carol's here this morning, but they lived 2 doors down, and I was in prayer, and God said, I want you to go over to Carol's place. And I said, okay, I'll do that when I'm done praying. So I got up and I went over, and I spent probably about a half hour just, she had coffee and we just talked and visited. And on my walk home, I thought, God, was that really you? I don't think I said anything that was of importance or anything, you know. And so I was wondering, 5 minutes after I got in the house, the phone rang, and it was Carol. And she said, Meredith, I just had to call you and thank you for coming over because I really needed you this morning. I thought, okay. So months and months went by when I responded, I mean, really strange things. But when I responded, it was affirmed by God that that was the way that He spoke to me. And I thank the Lord for that continued voice within me that helps me, I guess, be His hands and feet to the people that are around me. So I just thank the Lord for allowing. I don't know. I'm sure that God doesn't speak to everybody the same way. And my husband would say that was true, because he got his from reading the Bible. So, but that's the way God has been with me and been my friend and confidant and director of my life, and probably more since Paul died, because I can't go to him to have things done. So I just said, God, I need your help right now. I can't figure this out. And he has just been instantly, he either clears my mind so I can think clearly, or else he just sends somebody across my path, and he's always been there instantly for me. And I just praise the Lord for that, and I'm so thankful. I'm thankful too for the fact that I actually obeyed him that first time.
I just want to thank this place and Don. I wasn't going to name you, but everyone here, because I keep showing up, and it just feels very meditative. The reason that I'm here is because of Grace Kudo. Many, many, many years ago, kept urging me to come. Anyhow, this place feels like home. There are very positive aspects of that it reminds me of from the good parts of my old church in Brooklyn many, many moons ago. And it just feels, I like the way everyone supports one another in a very somewhat tacit way at times. So.
Yeah, Shane. I'm Sue Ann, and I was trying to think of something this morning. I am so grateful for so many things, for being able to come to this church for so many years, remembering Karen Waite, who just dearly loved. And this morning, I'm grateful for Doug. Most of you know that we're living in a land of cognitive impairment now. And he has one in the evening. I'll ask him he'll ask me what day it is, and I'll tell him Sunday's church. And would you like to come? And he will say, of course. And so in the morning, I wake him up. Our routine is to wake him up, give him his pill, sit beside him, scratch his back, which he just loves, and he is such a beautiful spirit now. I mean, I think of Roger, I think of some of the old days when things were not very, they could have been a lot better, and his spirit now is just a very beautiful, calm, and loving spirit. He tells you he's grateful for me. I'm so glad we're still together. It just a lovely thing. And this morning I woke him up and he said he wanted to go. And so we were sitting there. And then he said, could I just lay back down for 10 minutes? And I said, but we need to go now. And he's got ready to go. And then he said, I just think I'll lie down for a while. I'm not feeling really well. And so then I thought, well, okay, you know, I can still leave him for about an hour or so. So why don't I come? Why don't I just come? And this morning to see Elizabeth here, 16 years ago, Elizabeth, and in the midst of things in my life that were very, very hard, you gave me such touches of grace. And I just have loved you ever since. And I'm so grateful that I was able to come here today and to see you. I just thank you so much for being here. Don't know what miracle brought you here, but I know it was a miracle for so many people that you are here now. And I want to thank Rock, too, for talking about AA, because if Doug were here, this last week he was given a great gift. He speaks of AA in this church, so I'm not breaking any anonymity of his, because he would often get up and talk about being in AA and how the great gifts he'd given him. He went to we used to live up the hill by Canterbury, and at the Presbyterian Church, there was a Tuesday night meeting, men only. And he would walk around the block and every Tuesday night. And this last week, two of those wonderful guys called, and they said they wanted to come over, and they wanted to bring him his 40-year-old coin, 40-year coin. And so we thought just two of them were coming, but actually there were about eight of them came. And they came at this time last year for his 39-year-old coin, and he was in a deep decline and had to go to an adult foster care home, where he did get better and has come back to us in many ways. And here they were again. One of them made a cake from scratch, and the other brought ice cream, and we all sat around, and it was just, this year he was much more alert, and it was just a lovely, lovely gift. So I just want to say something for Nofer AA and the blessing that this church has these meetings every week. It's just such a wonderful gift, and he feels that if he were here, he would say it saved his life. He would not be alive now without AA. And so I'm just really grateful to be here this morning. Thank you.
Yeah, my name is Dmitry, and I was born and raised in Russia, and thankful for being here. I just wanted to share one experience that I had here in the States is when I had an internal bleeding. That was my ulcer. And I bled to the point where I lost about 2/3 of my blood. And I walked into the hospital and I just completely passed out. Saw the white light and literally I felt no pain, nothing. It came back after the emergency folks revived me. So I spent 2 weeks in the hospital with transfusions and, you know, all kinds of stuff. But I'm thankful for, you know, people that saved me.